You're tuned to Radio Regent, a community radio station streaming live from Regent Park Focus on RadioRegent.com. We're a volunteer-run community station, and we want your help. To pitch us a show, give us your feedback, or offer to help, call 647-344-4134. Radio Regent, the voice of your community.
Let anybody make you think that God chose America as his divine messianic force to be a sort of policeman of the whole world. God has a way of standing before the nations with judgment, and it seems that I can hear God saying to America, you're too arrogant. And if you don't change your ways, I will rise up and break the backbone of your power.
Satsuyakal, this is Sister Thage with Freedom Now, a Saturday afternoon Pan-African and Internationalist Public Affairs program. Freedom Now addresses issues and struggles from the values of egalitarianism, humanism, and the rights of all nations and people's right to self-determination in this age of United States empire building. So stay tuned for our agenda here at Freedom Now.
Which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend?
Hotep, Freedom Now agenda for this January 5th will have as our musical base throughout the program the conscious, soulful sounds of Curtis Mayfield, one of the leading R&B cultural giants of the Civil Rights Black Power period, with commentary by Norman Williams, producer of Radio Region in Canada and Haruru Radio. We will continue with the African drumbeat historical calendar, designed to motivate the 99% of us to throw off the shackles of the 1% domination of all humanity. Brother Billion will provide the free ideological weapons, DVDs or CDs, to free your mind so that your butt will follow. Our central and only theme tonight, this evening, will be discussion of the film Django, the most controversial film on race relations for the past 30 years since the Root TV series. We will present Spike Lee's position, an interview with Minister Brother Farrakhan, addressing the motivation behind the film. Then, in-studio guest Astenu from CMOTEP, Committee to Eliminate Media Offensive to African People, for content analysis of the film. Then excerpts from Anthony Samad and others from the Essawan Bookstore's Town Hall panel meeting last night for the African community's point of view. The response last night from the broader African community, which had an overflow crowd, was most surprisingly that 95% supported the film, contrary to popular media reports that proclaim that African people hated the film. So stay tuned, tell a friend, and put out the word that this afternoon's program can be reheard for the next 60 days under Audio Archives for Freedom Now at kpfk.org. Once again, under Audio Archives, Freedom Now, where past programs can be reheard. And as always, we stand ready for the revolution.
Which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night.
This is Brother Didon with the African Drumbeat Historical Calendar for the week of January 6th. We provide this historical calendar to further enlighten the listening audience on authentic contributions of people of color and a working class to the objective of a classless society rooted in peace, egalitarianism, and self-determination. We urge you to join an organization that's struggling for righteous social change. January 6, 1931, the Scottsboro Boys Trial occurs, where nine African youth were accused of raping two European women. Immortalized by the blues singer Leadbelly, NBC's TV movies, books such as The Killer Mockingbird and Allen Ginsberg, this case drew national attention led by the peoples of Harlem, many of whom were first-generation migrants from the South and later the Communist Party. This case was the first time that black men accused of rape in Alabama were not executed. January 7, 1891. Zora Neale Hurston was born. She got out of a jaywalking ticket once by saying, "I saw white folks crossing on a green light, so I just assumed the red was for me." She was a leading African folklorist, novelist, and the first black woman anthropologist in the United States, who recorded African folk traditions and cultures of the diaspora, especially in the United States and in Haiti. Her most notable novel, The Eyes Were Watching God, which contained active female protagonists and used black English as the language of her tales. January 8, 1886, Noble Drew Ali was born. Noble Drew Ali founded the Morris Science Temples of North America, a continuation of the Islamic traditions in the United States. These Islamic traditions began with the importation of African prisoners of war from Islamic countries of West Africa, who had superior agricultural skills for the plantation economy of slavery. Noble Drew Ali's movement gave rise to continued Islamic currents with Master Fard Muhammad, the founder of the Nation of Islam, the largest black nationalist theocratic organization in the United States today. January 8, 1959, the victory of the Socialist Cuban Revolution occurs, smashing the United States and mafia-backed Batista regime and destroying Cuba, being used as an island of sex, drugs, and gambling vices for U.S. tourists. January 9, 1905, the Russian Revolution breaks out in St. Petersburg, where the historical forces of the workers and revolutionary intelligentsia unite to overthrow the Tsarist feudal regime and build the first socialist state in modern times. Here, the working class and peasants, 99% of the population, becomes the rulers, not the capitalist class. The USSR, within 20 years, moved from being one of the poorest nations in Europe to a world power, providing unabated support for the anti-colonial liberation movements of Africa, Asia, and Latin America. January 9, 1912, the African National Congress, the ANC of South Africa, was formed. The ANC is the oldest liberation movement in Africa. 97 years later, the ANC demonstrates that the power of the people is greater than the combination of white settler rule and Western European and U.S. combined support to maintain apartheid. The ANC is the ruling party of South Africa today. The ANC was defined by the U.S. as a terrorist organization, with the U.S. CIA orchestrating the capture and imprisonment of Nelson Mandela. January 9, 1922, Sékou Touré, the Prime Minister of Guinea, who led this former French West African country to independence, was born. The Democratic Party of Guinea, of which Brother Touré was a leader, was the only French-speaking African country to sever all ties the former colonial master, thereby ensuing French rage. Months before independence, the French military stripped their former colony of electrical, plumbing, dug up the roads, buildings, and all administration, attempting to destroy the infrastructure of Guinea. This was set as an example to all French colonies of the price you pay. When you seek total independence, as opposed to a Commonwealth status with the French. This rape of this country strengthened and fortified the Guinean people and sacred Touré as part of the leadership together with Ghana, the Congo, Mali, Tanzania, Algeria, the list is long of those revolutionary Pan-African countries who during the 60s fought against U.S. and European imperialism and fought for building an all-African Union government, which objectively incorporating 53 African countries into one United States of Africa, thereby providing a massive bulwark against the oppressions of any Africans worldwide and U.S. imperialism. January 10, 1894, the African kinship group known as the Tuareg rise up in armed struggle against the Portuguese in the country of Bissau, which sets the historical antecedent for the rise of Amilcar Cabral and the PAIGC. The Tuareg are a desert Muslim people who have consistently fought in Mali, Niger, Algeria against French colonialism. The Tuareg are an example of the synchronization of Islam and traditional African values and culture. For instance, women in the Tuareg society have a strong and free position, and she decides over her own life. Men, not women, wear veils over their face in public. Women play a dominant role in their society where there is a matrilineal descent pattern. January 10, 1860, Henrietta Vinton Davis was born. She was an actress, teacher, and a Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Communities League leader. UNIA and ACL was the largest mass organization of African people in any country and any historical period in humankind history. She founded the Black Theater Company and was the director of the Black Star Shipping Line, a remarkable achievement in the era of segregation. January 10, 1864, George Washington Carver was born. Brother Carver, under a segregated U.S., was a scientist, botanist, inventor, and educator who revolutionized agriculture in the U.S. by his promotion of alternative crops to cotton, including the peanut and sweet potato, thereby increasing the quality of the soil through rotation. He invented over 100 products to be used from peanuts, including cosmetics, dyes, paints, plastic, gasoline, and nitroglycerin. His work destroyed the widespread stereotype that blacks were intellectually inferior to whites. January 11, 1959, the contemporary movement for the independence of Puerto Rico was launched as Puerto Ricans grow weary of the colonized status within the U.S. Empire. January 11, 1965, poet Lorraine Hansberry, author and dramatist, dies. Her works include Raisin in the Sun and To Be Young, Gifted and Black. Her themes include anti-racism, women's rights, and African liberation from colonialism. This has been the African Drumbeat Historical Calendar here at Freedom Now, 90.7 FM in Southern California and 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. Please join us in a unity chant of Amandala Awetu, which means the power belongs to the people. Amandala
Awetu!
Amandala
Awetu!
Amandala
Awetu!
Studio, Norman Richmond. We're doing a tribute today to Curtis Mayfield, one of the leading giants, cultural giants, for those of us who come out of the 60s, 70s, 80s, Black Power, Civil Rights, Pan-African, Afrocentric movements, and Brother Norman, who is a producer of a Saturday morning live show in Toronto, Canada called Radio Regent every Saturday, as well as Haruru Radio is, I guess the European scientific term would be ethnomusicologist, but he's a brother who just knows a whole lot about R&B and soul. Welcome to Southern California, Brother Norman.
Thank you very much. Now, Curtis Mayfield was called a gentle genius. He was is an overlooked giant in rhythm and blues and music, period, black music, I should say. He was a singer, songwriter, and producer. He was born on June 3rd, 1942, and he joined the Ancestors on December 26, 1996. He is best known for his soundtracks for the films Superfly, Sparkle, Let's Do It Again, Claudine, and Short Eyes. He even made a cameo appearance in the film Short Eyes. Mayfield recorded his last album, A New World Order, in 1996. The album earned him a Grammy nomination, and it was used in Spike Lee's film Get on the Bus. Nelson George, a great critic, pointed out that Mayfield balanced art and business and romance and revolution. Bob Marley, Peter Tosh, who I like to refer to as Walde Semayat, and Bunny Wailer all pointed to Mayfield as a major influence. He influenced all of them as individuals. Pardon me. I once saw Bunny Wailer close his show in Kingston, Jamaica, with Mayfield's "Keep On Moving." Bob Marley's "One Love," the song that is, some people have said that is the greatest song of all time, was some of the words were lifted from Curtis Mayfield's "People Get Ready." If you remember the words, "There ain't no room for the hopeless sinner who would hurt all mankind just to save his own," those are from the pen of Mr. Mayfield. Mayfield was an avid reader. His mother turned him on to Paul Lawrence Dunbar as a youth. Also, Sam Cooke was a big fan of Paul Lawrence Dunbar. Like Bob Marley, Mayfield left school at 16. His mother allowed him to join the Impressions with the proviso that he continue to study. Jerry Butler, who is a councilman in Chicago, said that Mayfield had one of the biggest libraries he had ever seen. Blue Lovett, the man with the Manhattans with the bass voice, he remembers seeing Curtis Mayfield reading books backstage and not wasting time, when he was performing with him coming up. While Mayfield supported Martin Luther King and Jesse Jackson, he visited Angela Davis when she was in prison at her request. He once told me, Curtis Mayfield, when I interviewed him, he told me that himself. He and Sam Gooden and Fred Cash performed acapella-ly at the Free Huey Newton rally in Oakland, California. He is also acknowledged by Malcolm X's daughter, Ilyasha Shabazz, in her book, Growing Up X. Mayfield was paralyzed in 1990, and it was an accident, and he was a pole struck him, and he was paralyzed from the neck down, and he joined the Ancestors, like I said, in 1996. But Mayfield's music has been kept alive by the hip hop generation. Kanye West, Lauryn Hill, Ice-T, and others have sampled and performed from the Curtis Mayfield songbook.
Thank you. We want to say right on to Brother Curtis Mayfield, a panther in music. I'm going to thank you, brother. I know the born and raised in LA, you've been in Canada, so I know you're enjoying this warm weather down here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, I haven't. It's wonderful.
We thank you, my brother. Moving on.
This is your president. Please listen carefully to the announcement I'm about to make. After careful consideration and research, Congress and myself have concluded that black people have not advanced technologically. Their educational testing scores are on a rapid decline. The vast majority of them are on welfare and producing babies at a faster rate than they can support them. And we will not carry them anymore. We are left with no other choice but to put slavery back into effect. All blacks will report to the designated camps in their area to receive further orders. The only blacks excused will be those serving in the United States military and the police. Any blacks who do not cooperate will be terminated immediately. I repeat, slavery is back in effect.
We're at war! That's what I told you. I know you heard what the president said, and if the nigga don't move, then he's dead.
Next, we'll have Spike Lee and Brother Minister Farrakhan.
Woman to woman and man to man. Blood rushes through your veins, you feel the fear. Who'd have thought that it could happen here in the land of the free?
And speaking of girls, I'm not going to see it. I'm not seeing it. And I think for me, the only thing I'm going to say is it'd be disrespectful to my ancestors to see that film. And that's the only thing I'm going to say. I can't disrespect my ancestors. Can't do it. Can't do it. Now, that's me. I'm not speaking on behalf of anybody but myself. Can't do it.
And next we have Brother Minister Farrakhan and Django.
I'm Dr. Boyce Watkins from yourblackworld.com, and I am here with an individual for whom I have tremendous respect, Minister Louis Farrakhan. Those of you who follow anything that I do, you know how much respect I have for Minister Farrakhan. I always say that he is the freest black man in America, in my opinion. Now, I want to start by asking you about something that you and I were discussing a few minutes ago, the new film Django Unchained. What was your take on the film when you went to go see it?
I always, Dr. Watkins, try to ascertain what is the motive of the writer, what is the motive of the producer, not what is the motive of the actor. Because actors, that's their job, if they like the script, to play the part. And every actor in that film, in my humble judgment, played their part. Now, looking at motives is what concerns me. A black man, angry. A black man, bitter. A black man, so deeply in love with his wife that he would endure what he endured to free her. A black man engaged with a white man who frees him, but is with him as a bounty hunter where he kills those who on the plantation that he knew mistreated our people. In the end, he kills all that represented slavery and destroyed the house of the slave master, and walks off in the sunset with his woman. He frees the servants and even kills the sister of DiCaprio, who seemed rather kind to his wife. But she was a mistress, and these were black women as slaves. I don't know my brother's, Spike Lee's point of view. I'd like to study it because he has an opinion that I don't think can be dismissed. However, I see guns in the hands of 270 million Americans. 88.8 guns for every 100 persons in this country. I see assault weapons. I see when our president, Barack Obama, became a president in 2008, there were 149 militias. Today, they are over 1,200 militia. And when they thought that he might be reelected, I'm speaking of gun owners or people that did not want the Second Amendment to be utilized but abandoned, they went out buying guns like guns were going out of style. So many people bought guns that the FBI had to go through over 1 million people to see whether they were fit to bear arms. When you have a government that 89% of the American people feel that Congress is not good, only 11% favor the Congress of the United States. When you have armed militia, and they are all white, they will not allow a black man to have guns and be in the company of other black men with guns forming a militia. The Second Amendment says that there was no well-regulated militia to protect a free state. They had just won their independence. That's the context of the Second Amendment. So it said that no American their right to bear arms should be infringed upon because there was no well-regulated militia. Here you have well-regulated police, well-regulated state troopers, well-regulated National Guard, well-regulated federal troops, well-regulated FBI and ATF. So if you have all of that well-regulated, what do American people need with all of these weapons that can kill 40 people at one time? So if they are angry with their government, and some of them, as you remember reading that this judge in Texas said that if Barack wins, that there may even be civil war. Civil war, who are you going to fight in a civil war? Who are the people that you want killed? So, to me, the movie changed the direction of guns against a focus on a government that's not working well for the American people to a threat from black people who have suffered and endured the worst form of slavery in human history. So now, I went to see the movie. A white woman coming out of the movie said to her husband, "I won't be able to eat tonight." The effect of that on white people is different from the effect on black people. Black people could sit there and remember his words, "I am one in 10,000. He played his part. And when they asked him about the word nigger that was used so much, I think about 110 times, yeah, he said, I had a chance to work off my frustration, you know, because he was killing all these white folk. Well, how does a white person see that? How do white people who feel the guilt of what their fathers have done to us, how do they feel? Do you think that they don't think that if black folk had a chance to do to them what they had done to us, That's what the movie is saying. That 1 out of 10,000 will be like that, and maybe more. So to me, I love this part. He played it well. Samuel Jackson, he played his part well. I mean, if I were a Tom sitting in the theater, I mean, he played Tom to the max. So a lightweight Tom would want to get out of being a Tom just looking at the way he played Uncle Tom. DiCaprio, he played the white man jam up. And those that were killing us and beating us and all of that, look, this was out of the past, but there are white people right now shooting black men down. I'm not talking about us killing each other now. I'm talking about white police, white people killing us at a rate that was even greater than the lynching. At a time, there was one lynching every 4 days. Now one black man dies in America at the hands of white people every 3 days. So to me, the movie had a purpose. And if a black man came out of that movie thinking like Django, and if white people came out of that movie seeing the slaughter of white people, and they are armed to the teeth, it's preparation for race war.
We are at war! That's what I told you. I know you
Once again, we're doing a tribute to Curtis Mayfield. You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and 93.7 FM in San Diego, on the line, on the web at kpfk.org. We just heard from Brother Minister Farrakhan. Next will be Brother Ostainu, and following Freedom Now will be Spotlight Africa and Aphrodisia. Once again, tribute to Brother Curtis Mayfield, and following Brother Ostainu. You're gonna make your fortune by and by, but if you lose, don't ask no questions why. The only game you know is do or die.
Well, to the people, this is your comrade Billion Blackson 365. The vision of a united socialist Africa has been manifested by Kwame Nkrumah, Shirley Graham Du Bois, Sekou Touré, Muammar Gaddafi, Marcus Garvey, Kwame Touré, and the list continues. It is in this spirit of socialist unification that we will provide weapons to free your mind so your butt can follow. So all of you who have not received giveaways from Freedom Now in the last 2 months, call us 818-985-5735 to receive a free copy of Naomi Klein's The Rise of Disaster Capitalism. This DVD exposes the powerful few who are making a killing around the world by cashing in on chaos and exploiting bloodshed and catastrophe to brutally implement their policies. If you live in the Los Angeles County area, you can pick up your copy at SO1 Bookstore, the movement's bookstore located in Leimert Park, 4327 Degnan Boulevard. Or you can call SO1 at 323-290-1048. If you live outside of LA County, we will mail it to you. All power to the people.
And once again, you can call 818-985 to receive, get on the list so that you can go to SO1 within Relieve the Station or drop the DVDs off at SO1. And all power to the people.
Whatever may be your birth sign, we are not of the same seed. Although we are both the same breed, together we're truly black power.
Power.
Learning to trust by the hour.
Power.
Loving our women now more.
Now more.
Respecting what black is now for. And we've got love.
We'd like to, once again, Curtis Mayfield, we'd like to welcome Brother Ostini from Committee to Eliminate Media Offensive to African People. Just a quick little story. When Spike Lee came out with the film Malcolm X, a lot of us in the movement were critical of the film, and the line we developed with Simotep and African United Front at that time was that if you don't know nothing about Malcolm X, the film is great. If you know anything about Malcolm X, the film is very, very short. But rather than just sitting on the outside criticizing the film, what occurred was we made hundreds of cassettes of Malcolm X's speeches, and we'd go back to the Baldwin Theater at the time over there in La Brea and Coliseum, and we would give copies of the actual words of Malcolm X to the young brothers and sisters going to see the film so they could truly understand Malcolm. So anyway, it's a little background story because I thought that was about 20, 30 years ago, but it shows the consistency of Simotep and the work we do in the Los Angeles area trying to combat European influencing the images of African people, which is your organization's specialization. So I'd like to welcome you, Brother Ostini, to Freedom Now, and to get Simotep's analysis and your analysis of the film we're talking about.
All right. Thank you.
Django.
Thank you, Brother D-Don, for allowing Simotep to be on your show again, as you often do. You're very, very open and supportive of our organization, and we appreciate that. And there are a number of different issues that I think come out of this whole movie, Django Unchained. First, it's raising the topic of slavery, of our enslavement. And it's something that's currently not really being taught in public schools. In fact, according to the current California state standards, U.S. history, the focus of U.S. history is the 20th century, right? So if you are somebody who hasn't had any kind of background, and you, the only area of U.S. history that you're focused on is the 20th century. Well, when the 20th century starts, you know, African people are in a pretty desperate situation. And without any kind of historical context, you don't even know why, right? So a lot of people are just ignorant in that fact. And then most Americans in general are ignorant of Africans' enslavement in America. So I think it was important to raise the topic so that we can start to have deeper discussions. And when we talk about video depictions of our enslavement, you know, it's already been brought up. Roots was probably one of the first depictions that had wide viewership. I mean, Roots was at the time the most watched miniseries in history, right? And so people in that generation got a chance to see it, got and understand it. But then you have a whole generation that's been born and again hasn't been taught the history in school that haven't had this history, right? And when you take a look at other mainstream depictions of slavery, you have Steven Spielberg's Amistad, which was problematic in some ways. You had Oprah Winfrey's movie Beloved, which, again, didn't get a lot of viewership. A lot of people didn't go to see those. And then kind of on the Afrocentric side, we had Haile Gerima's Sankofa, which a lot of people in the Afrocentric community got a chance to see. Again, a very realistic depiction of slavery. But I think Django Unchained for this generation is going to be similar to Roots for our generation, where a lot of people, it's going to be their first opportunity to really see slavery and what it was about. Now, we have to understand that no movie, not even a miniseries like Roots or any three-hour movie, could really depict all of the brutality that's involved in slavery. And I also kind of have to acknowledge that I have issues with a lot of Quentin Tarantino's movies myself. I mean, I can, on the one hand, kind of understand where Spike Lee is coming from because, you know, I had a lot of issues with movies like Pulp Fiction and things like that. But I would, you know, also kind of encourage Spike to see the movie himself and then be able to critique it, because it does show to me the brutality of slavery. Right. It shows, you know, Africans being whipped. Right. It shows the branding. Right. It shows the different kinds of constraints that Africans were under, whether it be the leg shackles and the impact that that had on the body, or those different kinds of masks that they made the Africans wear. The mutilation of Africans by animals, right? That was something that was prominent in the film, as well as this whole issue of Mandingo wrestling, where, you know, Africans had to fight, African men had to fight one another to the death for the entertainment and sport of white people, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I think that, again, it's important that people understand, you know, what that brutality was like, because, again, we're so far removed from it. And, you know, as African people are trying to talk about the impact of slavery and its impact on our current life, people don't seem to understand what that wasn't that bad. It was 200 years ago. Right. And even demands for reparations fall on deaf ears because people don't really understand the brutality of it. And so I think that to the extent that a movie like Django Unchained begins to raise that kind of an issue, I think is important as well. And then, you know, I think that there were, you know, a lot of the things that I think African people are identifying with positively is, I mean, let's be real, the revenge killings of the enslavers, right? Again, a lot of, I don't know how many African people are being taught about the slave uprisings of Nat Turner and the conspiracies of Denmark Vesey and people like that, to know that, you know, these kinds of things actually did take place. But again, this movie is an opportunity for us to explore that as well. Then, you know, a love story between a black man and a black woman, right? There's not often that you see that on the screen. And this brother, like Minister Farrakhan said earlier, risks life and limb to save his wife, right? So I think that's important as well. And then it shows black people winning, right? And I think that's an important image as well. So those are just some of the kind of initial impressions that I have of the movie. Right?
And we're going to follow with a presentation by Samad, mm-hmm. Anthony Samad, as well, some clips from the film. But I was just amazed that at the SO1 gathering yesterday evening, with the overflow crowd and the energy of the crowd, that 95% of the people loved the film. Mm-hmm. Critical issues, of course, but loved the film. And the 5% that didn't, in terms of the emailing and the broader media, there's a portrayal that our people didn't like the film. I think it also falls in a class category, because I think Brother Babu made a statement that fundamentally people watching the film, black folks, African people watching the film, fall in two categories. Those that want to kill white people, putting it simply, and that's what's stated at the gathering, and those that believe we can talk to them, we can rationalize with the slave owners, with white folks, to stop the racism. And the vast majority at the program last night, which was relatively close, 40, 50, 60 mm-hmm. professional people, working class people, mm-hmm. serious people, a lot of women there, probably about 70% women. And correct me if I'm wrong, Norman, you were there. You want to make a comment on this. The energy of the crowd towards the film was like, yeah, revenge killing. Yeah, mm-hmm. free it now. Yeah, pay the big payback time, as James Brown would say. What would you say, Norman?
Ditto.
Okay, cool. What we're going to do is go to a quick clip, and we'll come back to Brother Astainu.
And we've got love. We've got love.
Next, we're going to have Anthony Samad, who's the director of the Black Urban Forum, a really good gathering for discussion in our community, as well as former head of the NAACP. Anthony Samad.
Good evening, brothers and sisters. I believe that it is important that we have discussion pieces about our experience. That's one thing that is absent in Hollywood. And how I saw the movie, if you take it out of the period of 1858, it reminds me of a black exploitation movie that we would have seen in the 1960s or 70s. In which you have one black superhero that comes through the movie and kills every white person in the movie, saves his girl, and rides off into the sunset. We know that both Quentin Tarantino and Rachel Hudlin are culture critics, and we have to look at it through their lens. When we look at what we saw on the screen, I went and saw A Christmas Night. Didn't have anything else to do. I don't do Christmas. That's another panel. Right. But thank you for the clap. But the first thing that came to mind is that while we're prepared to watch films about slavery, slavery is just beneath the surface as far as black people are concerned. When we fast forward 165 years and we talk about the things we're talking about today with respect to Obama and those critics out there that says he's not doing enough about poverty, poverty is a direct vestige of slavery. African Americans were never repaired after slavery. The level of dysfunctionality that exists in our community can be directly attributed to the disrepair, the state of disrepair that African Americans were left in after the enslavement period, and the constant resistance to African Americans being part of mainstream society, even today. Okay, even today. And so when we see a film that wants to satirize slavery, I think that that's the thorn in everybody's claw, is the satirization of slavery. Quite frankly, I didn't know whether to laugh or be mad. Okay? Because there were some funny parts of the movie. I think the movie was factually inaccurate in some instances, you know, particularly with respect to the Klan scene, because the Klan didn't come into existence until 1866. And the movie is cast in 1858. But you kind of tried to figure out how they would ride a horse in a mask. And they fell out over it, too. Okay? I mean, so that was a funny part. But when you look at some of the other realities that we tend to forget about, the fact that it was against the law for a black person to even get on a horse, okay, that it was against the law for a black person to carry a gun. They actually had black codes in that period that prohibited black people from carrying weaponry, from protecting themselves, from owning property, from being able to even stay in a town. You noticed in many of the scenes when Django rode through towns, they weren't looking at him from the perspective of a black on a horse. They were looking at him from the perspective of what you're doing in our town. Because vagrancy and loitering was the leading cause for arrest to re-enslave black men during that period.
That's right.
If you did not have a white person to vouch for you, meaning that you didn't belong to somebody, and if you did not have a job where you were functioning in that society in a subordinated role, then you were arrested and re-enslaved. Okay? So those are the kind of things that we miss. Now, when you really and truly look at the context of the story, there were two states in the enslavement period that you really didn't function in, which I think was the irony of the story, and that was Tennessee and Mississippi. There's no way that you're going to kill everybody in Mississippi and be able to ride out slow. Okay? All right? I mean, so there were some aspects of the movie that were quite unrealistic. You know, there were some exchanges in that movie that we still see vestiges of slavery in our society today, which is black people talking directly to white people from a position of authority. Okay? And the fact that whether you had a master or not, the fact that you were considered property, whether you were a valet or whatever you were still subjugated. You still were not considered human. You were still considered a piece of property, and you probably would have been shot dead on the spot, and you would have just had to pay the man for his property. That's the reality of that. There was no such thing as protection or considerations given to such for blacks in that period. And so I think what people are most upset about is that, one, there wasn't a significant conversation about the humanity of blacks in that period. Okay? For all intents and purposes, Django was a tool that was being used to for a bondsman or for a person who was out there hunting down people who had skipped bonds, and he just basically used him as a tool in the game. However, it also demonstrated the level of sophistication that black people had in the enslavement period, in which we were savvy enough to take a circumstance and use it to our advantage. Okay? That's what you have to give Jamie Foxx credit for, and the writers in that movie credit for, that his whole mission was to find his wife and to move on with his life. And he had to encounter the dangers of the period, which he would have encountered anyway if he had not went and looked for his wife. He was going to encounter those dangers anyway. So he might as well encounter those dangers with a purpose. And so I didn't lose sight of the fact that it was entertainment. I did pay my $16, and I wanted to be entertained. And for the movie to be 2.5 hours long, right, to be exact, right, the fact that you would see a movie like that released on Christmas Day, being discussed in the context of whether it was time for us to talk about slavery, however we talk about it, okay? Because that ain't a subject that you can bring up at the cocktail party in mixed company. You can talk about a whole lot of stuff, but the first time you say, well, let's talk about some slavery, okay? They'll snatch the cup out your hand and show you to the door, okay? And so we can use this as an opportunity to leverage a prolonged discussion about slavery and how, one, black people feel about it, and try to find out if white people think anything about it. Because by and large, if you bring that conversation up in mixed company, they're not going to talk to you. Now, they want to talk to you about Lincoln, and Lincoln had more inaccuracies in it than Django. If you look at it from an accuracy perspective, how are you going to have a movie where black people don't talk about their circumstance? You don't have Frederick Douglass or Martin Delaney nowhere in the movie, okay? And so, you know, let's be consistent. Let's not lose perspective as if this movie couches the totality of our circumstance in that time period. That's what I have to say. Thank you.
We'll hear some voices now from the community town hall meeting at Esalen Bookstore last night.
The question I have, and then a comment, is do you think Inglourious Basterds would have been greenlighted if they used the word kike in fact? Once. You're not going to get away with that. And you have Harvey, the Weinstein brothers, who was behind this. Of course, you use nigger 150 times in this movie. You could also have historically accurate. If you want to be historically accurate, do you think the Nazis said, oh, you Jews? No, they call them names. But in Inglourious Basterds, that was not allowed, because Hollywood's not having it. That's a fact. Now, the other part is this. You have Buck and the Preacher that was mentioned by Babu. You also have Posse. Okay, those are accurate, but you did not hear the word nigger in them. The fact of the matter is, Quentin Tarantino is enamored, is obsessed with the word nigger. That's a fact. In any of his movies, you're going to see that in the movie. So as I see it, here's a white man who got away with saying nigger a whole bunch of times, laughing in our faces, as it were, and then he threw us a bone by having this superhero at the end run off with this woman, and of course still didn't get away with that. The last point I want to make is this, and that is, do you remember what was the last statement that the Uncle Tom brother, you know, Samuel L. Jackson's character said? You ain't going to get away. And no gunslinger's going to get away with what you've done. You cannot beat the white man. So I think that they threw us a bone. Everybody's all excited. And the fact of the matter is, it's still racist as can be. That is Hollywood and America.
She doesn't have count. Real loud.
Okay. No. However, that statement of black man coming to get his woman, and at all costs, it through all trials and tribulations to find her, to get her, and to take her away from that madness, to me was awesome.
300 years or more of slave driving sweat and welts on my back. This is my country.
The great Yvonne. Did you think, the panel think, that Jamie's role was to humanize Schultz? Because Schultz was an amoral character who all he was concerned about was making some money. But Jamie changes him and forces him to realize that just standing and not saying anything about slavery, not fighting against it, was wrong.
Yeah, this is Freedom Now. We're closing out. We'll continue on with this theme next week with former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, among others, Brother Babu, and we'll play some more clips. It's a very interesting topic. It's a topic that hasn't been on a dominant aspect of American culture for the last 30 years since the movie Roots. I'd like to thank Brother Norman from Toronto, Astainu, Sister Tej, our board op, Teddy, Brother Billion, and as always, we stand ready for the revolution.
Destroying me more, mounting up the toil and strife. But I'm a fool.
You're listening to KPFK, powered by
the... You're tuned to Radio Regent, a community radio station streaming live from Regent Park Focus on RadioRegent.com. We're a volunteer-run community station, and we want your help. To pitch us a show, give us your feedback, or offer to help, call 647-344-4134. Radio Regent, the voice of your community.
You are listening to Radio Regent. This is Saturday Morning Live, and you had been listening to Freedom Now. Norman was speaking about, talking about Curtis Mayfield. And it was a discussion around the film Django. And I just wanted to let people know Dr. Gerald Horn actually is going to be speaking about Django this afternoon, 2-3 Pacific, so it would be 5 Eastern, on Freedom Now as well, which is it's Freedom Now, and it's a radio station in Los Angeles, and it's I'm just trying to remember the thing, but anyway, if you go to our Facebook page, we'll be posting it, and it's also posted there with all the information. There's going to be a talk around will be a talk around Django. So if people wanted background on that. And
it's KPFK 90.7. So KPFK 90.7 FM.
Awesome. So we'll be probably updating you guys around that that discussion. And yeah, we're kind of wrapping up the show. I hope everybody enjoyed, and we will be here again next week, 10 to 1 p.m. And I hope everybody has a wonderful week, and we'll see people in the whirlwind.
Underground, we now have to deal with our own self-destruction. We cannot live on the surface of our earth any longer. There is now pollution in every natural mineral and material taken from the land. We have truly become a vast wasteland. And now underground, how will we deal with our society of discrimination among people? Near to hell. It's just as well. What will become of our children? Underground. Sight for an eternal night.
any